quality.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes, there comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The essentials. Serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation. And good evening and welcome to The Essentials, Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I am your host, Hubert Edwards. And this evening, as usual, we are going to have ourselves a wonderful conversation. We invite you to join in on the conversation. You know the numbers, 4224796 is our text line. If you want to send us a text, the numbers to call, 323-6232. 325-4316, 325-4259. I know there are some persons out there who are always listening, Sparky 52, some other persons who usually join us. We look forward to hearing from you because we have ourselves a very, very, very interesting and important guest this evening. And we're going to have a conversation, which I think is necessary for this time, is necessary for today, and is necessary for the future. When you think about a country the size of the Bahamas, you start to understand that it comes with certain advantages in size because of the size of the population. But there's also certain disadvantages, sometimes huge disadvantages. And so the question we always have to ask is, you know, where do we turn? Where are our friends? Where are our resources? Are the resources of the Bahamas, and by resources we mean mental capacity too, are these resident only in the confines of the country, or are they all over the world? And so this evening, we are going to be joined by a gentleman who was born right here in the Bahamas, but for the most part, he is now living outside of the Bahamas. He's a regional man, having worked in multiple countries, lived in multiple countries in the region, schooled in different countries within the region. And so I think he becomes, or he comes as an individual who is highly skilled, highly experienced, and carries a unique perspective, or multiple unique perspectives for that matter, in order to have this conversation with us. So our guest is on now. And so I want to introduce to you Mr. Andrew Ingram. He's the president and founder of NABHOOD, which is a National Association of Black Hotel Owners, Operators, and Developers. And he's many other things. He is a businessman, an entrepreneur. He is a developer, an investment advisor. He is a philanthropist, and overall, he's just, from my perspective, a very cool guy, an individual who is easy to talk to, very, very quick to share his knowledge and advice, and one who, no matter what the subject is about, at the end of the day, he always comes back to how can we make the Bahamas better. Andrew Ingram, welcome to The Essentials.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I really appreciate the opportunity. So I'm yours for the next however long you want me.
You're here until the end of the show. We go all the way up to 8 o'clock. So let's start by asking you, who exactly is Andrew Ingram?
Well, it's a good question. I sometimes have to ask myself. I'm a young man from Top, well, I guess I'm relatively young, from Tarpon Bay, Lutheran. Grew up in Nassau, schooled in Jamaica, worked in multiple jurisdictions from St. Martin to Jamaica, from Guadeloupe to Martinique, all the way to Mali in West Africa. But, you know, the foundation of who I am is a direct contribution, a direct relationship to my grandparents that lived in Tarpon Bay, Lutheran, and one lived in West Street in Bainetown, to my parents and my father, my mother both deceased at this time, but my father, who was a fireman and also owned a gas station on Broome Street and Blue Hill Road, and my mother that owned a dry goods store in Binney Street and Robinson Road, and particularly my grandfather in Bainetown and West Street, who ran a petty shop. And I said this the other day, how the devil did he do that with no computers? I don't know whether he even had a calculator, but it was is where I got my real training to understand people and how both my grandfather and my grandmother treated people that came in and said, Mr. Spence, we came for this or we came for that. So, you know, that's the really formation of who I am, made me who I am. And of course, having attended Northern Caribbean University during my my formative years, starting there in high school, boarding school. And I remember when my parents shipped my brother and I off to boarding school, I thought the world had collapsed on me. Little did I know, they were opening up the rest of the world to where I am today. So for that, I'm grateful.
Definitely. So, you know, it's great to have conversations with persons who have multiple perspectives. It's great to hear persons who remain emotionally connected to their roots. Oftentimes, you know, we hear about the individual who is successful, but we never hear about the grandmother, the grandfather. We never put a name to sometimes our parents. They just shadowy figures in the background. And oftentimes, we do not have or display a great enough or sufficient enough appreciation of the sacrifice and the work that they did to make our world better. So you were in Tarpon Bay, you grew up in New Providence, you went off to Jamaica, and you had the opportunity to see multiple jurisdictions around the region, around the Caribbean. And now you are, for the most part, in the United States. Tell us about what you do now, how you do that, and the connection to the Bahamas.
Sure, love to. My regular job that keeps me employed and allow me to be able to afford the internet to call you is back in 2001, I realized that looking at the tourism industry, and let me go back a bit further. Back in 1999, before Y2KG, I was doing a lot of work in tourism, specifically in Jamaica and here, and in St. Martin. And a colleague of mine, who at that time owned Vibe magazine, introduced me to a young man and gave me a $1 million contract to create an event called FUBU Y2G. I didn't bother to ask who Damon John was or who FUBU was, because I knew neither, until I came home and told my kids that I won't be home this holiday because I'm doing something in St. Martin, but FUBU Y2G. And my oldest son said, FUBU, you gotta be kidding. You gotta get us some clothing. So unknown to me, when I met Damon John, I said, Damon, I'm gonna be away with you, so you've gotta give me some clothes. Damon sent me a big trunk full of FUBU outfits that my kids sometimes today still have them. But what was critical in that first event that I created for FUBU in St. Martin, we selected St. Martin and Anguilla, another place I've worked in the past, because we wanted to give African-Americans a new experience. And we wanted to expose those regional countries to the wealth of African-Americans. So before Jay-Z got with Beyonce, before Puffy was Puffy, before BET was hot, we spent some time creating a big event in St. Martin. We did television shows from there in Anguilla. We leased a hotel because, unbeknown to me, hotels typically close for a month. I selected the wrong dates when the hotels were closed. So I only needed 4 days, but I had to pay for a week and keep the hotel fully staffed. So that gave me an idea that when I looked at expenditure, I understood that at the conclusion of the event, I spent $1 million and I had nothing to show for it except a memorable experience.
Mm-hmm.
Being very conscious, I employed all the chefs on the island. I rented all the villas, as many as I can. And I made sure that tourism had a trickle-down impact, that people really were impacted and can make a living. When I rented these villas, I brought in spa therapists for Star Jones, for Wendy Williams, before they were Wendy Williams. And we created an experience that I tried to demonstrate to the Eastern Caribbean, particularly St. Martin and Anguilla, that you do not have to be a hotel owner to benefit from tourism. The cultural nuances, the beach party at Allen Gums, Rendezvous Bay, where the Anguillian government allowed us to bring immigration to Rendezvous Bay rather than going to the specific port that they typically would use. And I chartered a ship and put 500 people on that boat and rolled it right into Rendezvous Bay. So it gave me some idea of thinking, why can't we own hotels? What do I do today? So in 2001, I created the National Association of Black Hotel Owners, Operators, and Developers. I had a bunch of rich friends and well-placed friends, and I said, why can't we own hotels? Unknown to me, coming from a jurisdiction like the Bahamas in the Caribbean, where we think we should own more hotels as locals, we don't. But unknown to me, in America, there was only one branded hotel in Memphis, Tennessee. So we started our network. My first meeting was held in Peachtree City, just outside of Atlanta. I had no idea where Peachtree City, but a friend of mine who was an NFL player called Darnell Thompson, played for the Indianapolis Colts, we had convinced to buy a hotel in Peachtree City. So he had bought a Comfort Inn. So I suggested appropriately, we formed the association at his hotel in Peachtree City, which we did. Now you think about it, this is 2022. There are more than 58,000 hotels in the United States. Asian Americans or East Indians own 62% of all the hotels. African Americans only own just over 2,000 hotels. However, and I predicted this, in 10 years, we will have more hotel rooms than any other group under ownership. And there's a simple reason for that. And that is we buy larger hotels than our partners in the Asian American community because we are investors and we typically have no interest in running our hotels. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that, how we're going to fill that gap. So if you think about it, 2001 to 2022, the second largest hotel in the United States is called Park Hotels and Resorts. Park Hotel is ran by my vice chair, of our board, Tom Baltimore, who at one time negotiated to buy South Ocean when he worked for Bob Johnson. That deal didn't go well, and we promptly left the jurisdiction and started focusing on other opportunities. But Tom owns most of the Hiltons around the world and in the US. When Hilton split, and by the way, most hotel companies don't own hotels. Marriott don't own hotels. Hilton doesn't own hotels. Choice doesn't own hotels, the Comfort Inns you see. SLS, obviously in the Bahamas, Hyatt, privately held company. But most of these companies don't own hotels. So Tom Baltimore became the chairman, president, CEO of Park. And prior to that, he built a hotel company called RLJ, which is the third largest hotel company in the United States. The beauty is that it's also run by an African-American young woman who is absolutely brilliant. We had her in the Bahamas many years ago, looking around, enjoyed herself. And I always said to them, why can't we buy hotels in the Bahamas? Very difficult, but we can. I'm happy to say right before your call, I got off the phone with a local attorney in Nassau, is working on a deal. We have two new hotels, one new hotel and one acquisition coming to the Bahamas. Unfortunately, I can't give those names out, but that local attorney informed me that paperwork was sent back to the principals, who, by the way, 10 years ago, when I tried to get him to look at the Bahamas, he said he wasn't interested in the Caribbean, but he picked up a small hotel in the Cayman Islands, and it became so successful that every time I speak with him and most of my colleagues, they said, when are we going to build something in the Bahamas? But I spent a lot of time putting deals together. Part of our organization includes Thompson Hospitality, which runs the largest food service, minority food service hotel in the company. And if you notice, I do a lot of the specialization in what I call African-American multicultural travel, because the fastest growing segment of the travel industry is multicultural and heritage travel. And for that, African-Americans spend a lot of money because they travel off peak. And I should tell you that the last data by MMG Global showed that $107.4 billion are spent by African-Americans in the travel business. So part of what I do every day, and I spend a lot of time on the phone call prior to the COVID, I did about 1 million miles a year, but having a 2-year-old grandson and working from home since COVID, I'm getting happy. And I think I like this, where I don't have to get on an airplane that often, except I'm on one next week with my Indian partners, who I'm prepared to sign an MOU with the Asian American hotel owners to work together on investing, finding deals, and just making the industry great. I should also tell you, proud event that I'm probably will be most proud of when it's completed. In 2018, we took a small group, young Jamaican partner that lived in Miami, and we started talking about how we can make an impact and raise money. He asked if I can introduce them to Hilton, which I did. He asked if I can bring Blackstone to the table, a large private equity firm. I did. And at our summit that we hold once a year in Miami, this year will be July 13, we put everybody together. And as a result, this past Friday, the General Services Administration announced that the lease that Trump held on the DC hotel will now be sold to a local company here in Miami, who went out and raised $650 million using the same principle of our network of high net worth individuals to raise capital to get into the hotel business.
I think that's a beautiful story. And you said this is owned by a Caribbean man. It's from Jamaica.
From Kingston, Jamaica.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's exciting to hear these things. And, you know, as I listen to you, again, one of the reasons that you are such a fascinating personality is your connection to this country, your connection to Jamaica, your connection to so many other Caribbean regions, and so Caribbean countries or jurisdiction. And consequently, when I listen to your stories of, you know, bringing persons to the table, bringing investors, building possibility, the question which naturally comes to the fore is, you know, what about us? And by us, I mean, what about us here in the Bahamas? What about us in Jamaica, locally on Caribbean soil? How do we use this brain power, Andrew? How do we harness the experience which sits outside the borders, but really is belonging to us internally, emotionally, and otherwise? How do we start to leverage that for a better country? So let's focus on the Bahamas for the time being. The Bahamas is highly reliant on tourism. Of course, it's number one industry. We have individuals like yourself who is out there wheeling and dealing, but too often the deals which are done locally does not involve us. How do we change that?
Well, that's a good question. I think the first thing that the Bahamas have to do is really, in a meaningful way, is engage its diaspora. We have a lot of people offshore that have relatives. I entered a deal with a relative of mine. I intend to enter additional deals with them to do business at home. When we look at other, let's take Jamaica for an example. I know we're talking about the Bahamas. And you and I had this discussion, I believe, earlier this week. Jamaica does a very good job, whether it's through tourism or whether it's investment, of engaging their diaspora. I got an invitation last week, Thursday. Both my colleague from Kingston and I, and we have another colleague from Mandeville, Craig Livingston, another Jamaican who's building $187 million hotel in Harlem. And we were invited to have dinner by the ambassador of Jamaica with the prime minister of Jamaica. Unfortunately, all three of us were in the middle of transaction last week, Thursday. Would have loved to be in Washington, D.C. I was scheduled to fly that morning, but we couldn't. But I think part of the brain drain in the region and part of it in the Bahamas is one that there must be the synergy of people wanting you to work with them. Mm-hmm. I always tell people that the one thing I can never change, nor do I want to change, is the fact that I'm a Bahamian born in Pompano Bay, grew up in Nassau and schooled in Jamaica. Those are the facts. If I may deviate for 1 second, the school I attended in Jamaica, I entered into an agreement with them, and we're going to build a 300-acre power generation solar plant in St. Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. And part of my give back is when we negotiated that deal with the company, I said to them, here's what I want you to do for the university I attended. So there's a holistic approach, and in the Bahamas, with such a small country, we've got probably, I know this number is going to shock some people, we probably got 200,000 people outside of the Bahamas with Bahamian roots. But yet today, I got a call from a young lady, former elected official, that said they want to create a cultural corridor to celebrate Bahamian history in Miami. And a question to me, can I get the Bahamian government or Bahamian officials to participate? My immediate response was absolutely. So I think for us in the Bahamas, there has to be, and from both sides of the fence, there has to be more defined planning to engage successful Bahamians and Bahamians in general. Mm-hmm. You know, think about it. If I ran the tourist office or if I ran the foreign affairs, I would be mining the society here to find Bahamians who I can engage with, either through employment, either through networking, either through events. And, you know, we had a hurricane recently and we hosted an event for the Prime Minister, Prime Minister Davis. And I've got to tell you, his heartfelt thank you, the people that participated during the hurricane, helping the Bahamas. I've never seen the sort of response to a prime minister walking around and individually thanking people, and people felt really thankful and engaged. So engaged that they would come back to us and said, what can we do? Which is why we created the first annual Bahamas Diaspora Summit, which will take place in Miami. July the 15th through the 17th.
Yeah, we want to talk about that. But before you get there, I want to, if you will, to kind of just lay out, you know, what does the landscape look like when you talk about these 200,000 persons? And I want to challenge you on that number, because I think the phenomenon here is, or at least it's not a phenomenon, but the realities here is similar to that of Jamaica, where it has always been argued long and repeatedly that there are more Jamaicans outside of Jamaica than in Jamaica itself, between direct Jamaicans and diaspora and you know, second and third generation, that sort of thing. But from the outside looking in, and you are more connected to them, paint for us a picture of who these people are. You know, what are they doing? Where are they in the American society? So let's take South Florida. Let's take the eastern seashore, seafront of the United States. And just paint us a picture of who these people that we're talking about. It's not just, you know, a Hubert Edwards who happened to be living someplace on Second Street, someplace in Miami. Who are these persons?
Well, you know, most of these folks started on Second Street in Miami, as where my father had a restaurant, or my brother, that ran on Second Avenue, I think. Yeah, Second Avenue, called Bahamian Connection in Miami. That's now is a great piece of real estate that I'm grateful for his vision. But, you know, it's interesting. The first person of color to integrate the Miami Lakes Country Club, parents was from the Bahamas. At one time, we had three people on the Miami-Dade County Commission. One person in particular, Commissioner Morse, was born in Cat Island. Sydney Poitier's aunt, Sylvia Poitier, became the first person of color to sit on the Broward County Commission. And I'm gonna go back and tell you why these elected official seats are so important, pretty much to being a member of parliament at home. And if you go up the road from Miami to Riviera Beach, West Park, Pastor Jones, Mr. Dorset, Bahamian, Lauderhill, where I just secured two pieces of fire equipment for the Bahamas. The mayor, Mr. Thurston, is from Cat Island. His family is from Cat Island. Jabo, another gentleman from Cat Island. So when you look at the politics, which includes laws that can be changed or that are changing, but more important, opportunity to do business. When you look at the gentleman that's second in charge of the port, one of the most busiest port on the eastern seaboard, Port Everglades. He's from Freeport, Mm-hmm. And I remember in December, when the prime minister was having a private dinner with us, he said, "Do you know Mr. Charlton?" I said, "I don't only know Mr. Charlton, but he's here at the reception. And once you get out here, you get a chance to meet with him." So when you go down the landscape, there's so many people that are in important positions that can make the change. The Lyric Theater and the lady that runs the archives, the South Florida Black Archives in Miami, Dr. Dorothy Fields, is a proud Bahamian that went out and raised over $20 million to rehab Overtown, where we can create some of the history. And one of the finest theaters in Overtown is called the Lyric Theater. Mm-hmm. The Hampton House is the founding chairman of that is Dr. Edith Pinckney, who was able to convince Miami-Dade County, to spend money to rehab the place where Martin Luther King, Muhammad Ali, in one of the hotels, I think it's off 27th Avenue. Wilkie Ferguson, one of the first federal judges. Betty Ferguson, who Barbara Jordan. And the names go on and on, just in the South Florida market of Bahamians that are not only changing the political and economic landscape of their communities here, but through their Bahamian connection roots, whether you call Shannon Igadaro, who is a Hasty Tynes, the newly councilwoman for Miami Gardens, when you reach out to those Bahamians, and if you ever look into somebody's eyes and said, "Are you a Bahamian?" you see a bright star. Mm. I was talking to a young lady, emailing a young lady the other day who works for Orkin in Atlanta, and her name was Octavia Roll. And so as we concluded our business for them to spend some money joining our organization, I texted her a note. I emailed the note. I said, "By the way, are you Bahamian with a name like Roll?" And she said, "Absolutely, I'm Bahamian, but I don't get a chance to do a whole lot of business or go and visit to the Bahamas." I said, "Why?" She said, "Well, I'm too busy. And they've never reached out to me. And so, we go other places." So I think when you look at the political landscape and you look at the economic landscape, some of the wealthiest people with Bahamian roots that you mentioned, 2nd Street and 2nd Avenue, that grew up in Overtown and Gould's and Richmond Heights and Miami Gardens and Carver Ranches have gone on to have successful, not only political career, but business careers. And those that are in a position to help the Bahamas and want to help and will help and are helping. Mm-hmm. Can we do more? Absolutely. Should we do more? There's no question, because our commitment will always be where our heart is, and that is the Bahamas.
Definitely. And so we want to talk about that. We want to talk more about how this engagement with the diaspora happens. You mentioned earlier this idea of brain drain. We'll touch on that a little bit, but we're going to take a break. Before I get into the break, we have a couple of texts here. For our Bahamas, we have to get out of our local Bahamian mentality that Bahamians living abroad or people who are of Bahamian heritage are not really Bahamian. This class system stops the diaspora from contributing to the local Bahamians, from accepting their help, investment, knowledge, and expertise. I think, at the end of the day, there's so much more out there. There is so much sitting in the diaspora. If you look around, you look at Jamaica, you look at some of the countries in Asia, they leverage in a very, very significant and successful way the diaspora for investment. And as Andrew said, there is nothing like a connection. There's nothing like an individual whose eyes twinkle at the name of their country. There is nothing like a connection which goes back historically, even if the individual wasn't born here. But they have a historical, a familial, a cultural connection with the country. Sometimes these are the individuals who will take you, put you on the shoulder, and take you further than any other individual, any other investor, any other grouping will, because of the connection. Sometimes you can't explain it, but that connection is sometimes way, way more important than dollars and cents. You're listening to The Essential to Reset. My guest is Andrew Ingram, a guy from Tarpon Bay. He's a young man from Tarpon Bay, grew up in Nassau, school in Jamaica, work all throughout the Caribbean, made a trot over to Mali. He's been all over the world, traveled a million miles per year, and we have him right here on The Essential sharing. When we come back, we're going to talk about how do we engage the diaspora and the role the government has to play in this process. Don't move. Come right back.
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Balu's pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Balu's, Nassau East South. Call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Balu's, the jerk with the soul of reggae and the spirit of Junkanoo. Balu's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
Guardian Radio. Radio 96.9 celebrates 10 years as the country's first ever and only all-news talk radio station.
Guardian Radio.
Guardian Radio.
Guardian 96.9 FM.
Come join Guardian Radio 96.9 in this wonderful celebration of 10 years on the air by placing your ad in the Nassau Guardian's special anniversary tabloid publication.
Guardian Radio 96.9.
We have fantastic anniversary rates just for this occasion. Imagine full, half, and quarter page ads in color or black and white at the lowest rates ever.
And you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio.
And you can get 10 radio spots between April 11th and 15th for only $302. Prices include VAT. Call your account executive today at 302-2300. 302-2300. And get your ad in by Wednesday, April 6th. Come celebrate with Guardian Radio 96.9, 10 years of fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to The Essentials. We're having this conversation with Mr. Andrew Ingram. I see we have a caller. We're going to take you momentarily. But we're talking about the Bahamas. We're talking about the potential. We're talking about what lies outside the borders and how we can start to kind of frame our mind and set our eyes and dream and strategize in a way to ensure that the Bahamas can glean value from some of what it has produced and given to the world in terms of its diaspora. Caller, you're on Guardian Radio.
The Essential. Pleasure. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sparky. I know I was going to hear from you. How you doing?
Well, you know, that's one thing that always amazes me, and I'd like to say good afternoon to Mr. Ingram. Hello, sir.
Hi, Sparky. I hear your comments all the time. It's a privilege to say hello and meet you.
A lot of them, too. Well, the first thing I'd like to do, sir, and this is always a pet peeve of mine, is to congratulate you as a Bahamian. And then when it comes to both of you gentlemen, I'd like to congratulate you both for something that I always observed. I've never met Mr. Edwards, but from my first heard him, I always admired him, no matter what he's done, where he's gone, from humble beginnings in the country in Jamaica, and now living in the Bahamas and assisting us in many ways. He still sounds like a Jamaican. And when I listen to you, Mr. Ingram, leaving here as a youngster to go to Jamaica, to go to Mali, to go up and down the Caribbean, to go to America, to come back, you still sound like a Bahamian.
I am Bahamian, sir. Thank you very much.
We got Bahamians here for some reason. I don't know why we're not proud to be Bahamians. One of the most beautiful places in the world, the Commonwealth, the beautiful Commonwealth of the Bahama Islands. People say God vacations some other places, but he lives in the Bahamas. And what gets me is a young person in the Bahamas could spend 19, 20 years of his life in New Providence. We got to get this thing up, mix up between Nassau, New Providence, and the Bahamas. I don't say that the Bahamas is Nassau, because Nassau is only a little city out Bay Street in New Providence. A lot of people don't know that. But the thing is, you could go to Miami or Washington or San Francisco for 3-4 years to school, and you come back talking like an American, and you believe you have arrived. And we're not proud. In this day and time, where the world seems to want to come to the Bahamas, and stay here, and we want to talk like Americans. Have a good day. That's all I got to say.
Thank you much, Sparky. Keep the Bahamian vernacular going, because, you know, there's no place in the world that bay means boy and girl. And so it's one of those things which culturally, you have to embrace who you are. You have to embrace where you're from. And you have to sell that to the world because, you know, interestingly, oftentimes we think we need to assimilate to the extent that we become like everybody else when the world is asking us to be our best Bahamian, our best Jamaican, our best Trinidadian, Barbadian, whatsoever it is. They like us and we should present that to them.
You know, that's interesting what Sparky said and what you just commented on, because on the weekends, I don't mind going to and getting me some sheep tongue sauce or some chicken sauce and Johnny cake from sheep tongue from Dwikey's in Hollywood, or sheep tongue from Lynn's Kitchen, Mr. Dorset, in Hollywood. And that's critical because, you know, I talk about the politics. There's a young man called Quentin Primo. Quentin Primo is one of the richest Black men in the country that lives in Chicago. And I was attending an investment conference in New York. And every place I go, I keep my lapel, my flag of the Bahamas on my lapel. And a young lady walked up to me and she said, "You must be from the Bahamas." And I said, "Yes." And I said, "Well, I'm impressed. How'd you know it was a Bahamian flag?" She said, "My grandmother is from the Bahamas." I said, "Wait a minute. Aren't you Quentin Primo's nephew, a niece?" She said, "Yes. Quentin's mother is from the Bahamas." And I said, "I'll be done. Quentin Primo is a real estate developer and investor that does business in India and in Africa." And I always say to him, "Why aren't you doing business in the Bahamas?" And when Obama was running for president, he's a personal friend of Mr. Obama, President Obama, and was on his first finance campaign and was on his White House transition team. Now, just think for a second. Imagine if he was engaged with us, that relationship and how that can be utilized in the interest of the Bahamas, not taking anything away from the US. But Quentin Primo's mother is from Long Island. She's a Thompson from Long Island who happened to be living in Miami. And Quentin Primo's father was the bishop at St. Agnes Church in Miami, one of the largest congregation of Bahamians. And Father Roll is there now. Father Barry just passed away recently at that church. But I was so fascinated by this young lady's comment to me. I said to Quentin, who at that time led Primo Capital and still does, as Primo Foundation, does a lot of work. I said, how come you don't do any business with the Bahamas? He said, Andy, when my parents moved to Chicago, you get busy. And every so often he would tell me he would go down to the Bahamas for holiday, but he never just engaged any of his family members. Some he did, not from a business perspective. And so to me, those are lost opportunities.
Yeah.
The only African-American man to own a golf course in Florida is Stanley Campbell, again, whose mother is from the Bahamas. Just outside of Palm Beach, he owns one of the finest golf courses. I was up there having dinner with him and his wife the other day. And by the way, Stanley Campbell's wife is the second highest ranking person of color in the Biden administration.
Wow. That, but, you know, and I think, you know, it's fascinating to have these conversations because, or to talk about aspects of this, and persons may be thinking, well, you know, and, you know, as they say in the Bahamas, you know, Andrew Ingram can really drop names, right? Because in Bahamas, dropping name is a thing. But it is more fundamental than that. What we are doing here is painting a picture and weaving a web of possibilities. Because at some point in time, as we talk about foreign direct investment, as we talk about growing the country, as we talk about how to harness the potential of the family islands and how to move the Bahamas into a circumstance where we are experiencing greater growth, greater development, greater sustainability, it becomes necessary for us to be able to tap into a system. We're not just out there willy-nilly seeking to find investor from here, there, or anywhere. Wouldn't it be wonderful if a part of that feeder process for our foreign direct investment is kind of being funneled or at least connected through the Bahamian diaspora? Not necessarily only diaspora persons will be investing, but they too will be extending their own network, would go outside the diaspora itself and bringing that much greater value to the Bahamas. My question to you, Andrew, is what is the role of government, a proactive role of government in making that more of a reality?
I think the role of government is extremely critical. They have a mission, and that is to make a better Bahamas. They have the way to get that done through the resources. And I think for them, it's simply extending the hand, the commitment. I don't know a whole lot of Bahamians here that engage either as consultants. Usually when I read the newspaper, I hear about all these consultants that government hires. But quite frankly, imagine, and I remember when Quentin Primo and called me about the property in Grand Bahama, being a real estate guy. But government has to do a better job of engaging the diaspora. They have to really begin to extend themselves, because the easiest sell is through a relationship. The easiest sell is through a commitment. Yeah, and people talk about name dropping, but I tell folks, you've got to be about action. Pick up the phone and call the individual. If you have that relationship, it becomes much easier to consummate the deal. And, you know, I tell people this all the time. I happen to be, in my opinion, one of the luckiest guys in the world, not only because I have a tremendous network, but I have a tremendous personal connected relationship network. And that is, if we have an issue, we can pick up the phone and make a phone call. You know, when I first came home from school, there was a young politician, and I couldn't get anything done. Nobody would pay attention to me. There was a young politician, I don't remember whether he was in office or out of office. I was trying to bring some investors to Freeport. These investors were people of color, and nobody really took us serious. But a young man at that time by the name of C.A. Smith took me by the hand and showed me the ropes. His wife is from Tarpon Bay, who was a friend of my grandparents, and really taught me what relationship building at that early stage of my life. I thought of the hotshot investment bank. I thought I could bring deals together, but hey, without those relationships at home, I was dead in the water. Mm-hmm. But he taught me how to go through that. Today, as a result, we made a commitment through his foundation, the C.A. Smith Foundation. Recently, we, through our honorary council relationships and some of those relationships that we've had, we committed $1 million to agricultural students to study at Florida A&M. We have students studying all over the world that we have made a commitment to find the financing, to raise the money. And these are all through relationships, whether it's aviation at Florida Memorial College, whether it's a young lady, Mrs. Farquharson, who just wrote us a letter thanking us for the financial support for graduating and climate change and these studies that we specifically targeted because it's what the Bahamas need. But again, it is about relationship business. What could the government do? And the government is doing some of it, is just extending the hand, calling on Bahamians, and then really showcasing to them or demonstrating to them that they are really critical and it's a serious relationship that they want to be engaged in and help nation building. I'm all about nation building. In the hotel business, we created what we call a new generation of leaders because I got sick and tired of going to the hotels and not seeing people of color, people look like me. I can't tell my grandson that we own hotels, but yet we have no persons of color working for us. I can't tell my granddaughter that, you know, Black general managers are a dying breed in a place like Miami. I wrote an article, started with an email in Miami, and I asked the question, why are there so few Black GMs in South Florida? Well, you know what? I engage a lot of our partners at Hilton and Marriott. And I said, you know, Michael Hooper, who's the GM at the Airport Hilton, who used to be the GM at the Nassau Hilton, whose father is a great musician, and whose brothers, Eric and Shane and all those Gibson fellas that have been very successful, why can't we have more Michael Hoopers? Why can't we and the government, we being private sector and government, come up with a program to begin that next generation of Bahamian leaders, creating a succession plan finding money to help with education, whether it's domestically or internationally, or making that contact. I was just informed today, all four of our agricultural students under the Friendship Alliance with Dr. Bill Picard and Governor C.A. Smith have all received internship from a farm consortium, one of our partners in the Midwest and the state of Michigan. What is that a result of? Reaching out and creating those relationships. So government has a responsibility to create those relationships, use those relationships, not only when it's a time of need, but begin to mine them and develop them so that when the time of need comes, they're there and we're not scrambling around to say, where's our friends?
Yeah. Before we get to the diaspora conference, which I think is a big issue, it's absolutely a big issue. Let's talk about the relationship with the region. In many ways, I think the Bahamas has the potential to deliver greater leadership and to be a more forefront leader in Caribbean relationships, in Caribbean business, in Caribbean life, in CARICOM, whichever perspective you want to take it from. Up to now, you know, we have been engaged, the things which are happening in the Bahamas is involved, but for some reason, at least from my perspective, it lags its potential. How should the Bahamas see itself within the region, and what more can be done from your perspective, having worked extensively across the region? What more can and should be done to leverage that and to create the ability to step forward as a clear leader in at least multiple aspects of Caribbean life?
Good point. I got a note today from a colleague of mine, and they asked me, did I see the recent appointments of ambassadors? And I said I hadn't, and she sent it to me. Maybe if I read the papers there, maybe it was in the papers. But, you know, the Bahamas sits 20 miles off the coast of, 20 minutes off the coast, the greatest marketplace in the world called the place called the United States. They've been leaders for quite a long time. We've lost a lot of our leadership. But I think having an open door policy, and the good thing about Bahamians, they travel individually and collectively. Sandy Sands, who was at Bahama, spent a number of years in Jamaica as a hotelier. I always tell people when I'm through the region, they always ask me about one person. I always think they would ask me about Sir Lyndon Pinling, my personal hero, but they always ask me about a guy named Vincent Vanderpool Wallace. And because as a leader in the region, as former Secretary General of CTO, I think it is, but you know, the idea that the Bahamas leads in terms of the economy, the standard of living, I think just through extension, we can project that and do a little bit more work out through the region. We should be encouraging our nationals to get involved with different regional organizations. Hopefully that works. A lot of these regional organizations spend a lot of time and really get nothing done for whatever reason that is the case. But the Bahamas have had some brilliant minds, like a number of the other Caribbean countries, including Jamaica, where people have gone off and have come back and have the wherewithal. And we just got to engage and push those, whether it's educators, whether it's financial wizards. I mean, I always reminded of a good friend of mine called Jerry Butler, the IDB. Him being at one point the highest ranking the highest ranking Bahamian ever to reach executive directorship, that was cut short when he was pulled back from the IDB. But we've got to take this issue that we have in the Bahamas of keeping each other back and help propel our brilliant minds around the region and around the world, which we do through educational scholarships for young people, where we can really have an impact. And to me, that's going to be critical as we begin to grow and build a better nation.
And I think, you know, that's well said. I share your views. I want to align with that sentiment that the economic difference or the economic advantage that the Bahamas have, the geopolitical advantage being on the doorstep of the United States, the standard of living, the fact that the Bahamas may be one of the greatest melting pot within the Caribbean region itself, not just of Caribbean people, but of other persons, other nations outside of the region, from Europe, from United States, from all over the world. This, I think, makes it a cultural juggernaut, or at least a potential cultural juggernaut. Also, a center which can attract a different approach, a different type of a look as it relates to, you know, attracting investment and moving throughout the region where the Bahamas becomes the hub. One of the things I've always discussed, especially with Jamaicans, is understand the value of making money in Jamaica, sometimes a more vibrant environment than the Bahamas for many, many reasons. But having your treasury located in the Bahamas because it has a more stable foreign currency base, and Jamaica is exposed to the ravages of an exchange rate which fluctuates significantly. And if we can make some of those connections, not just Jamaica-Bahamas, but create nexus, Jamaica-Bahamas, Barbados, Cayman, Trinidad, and so on and so forth, and start to understand the potential of working together and the fact that together we can create more, I believe, it's my view, that we can see a country and a region which is way better positioned to achieve its potential than we are seeing today.
I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, you're listening to The Essentials, The Reset. I have with me the one and only Andrew Ingram, an individual who is well-connected, highly influential, and well-grounded in this idea of what it means to be Bahamian, what it means to be Caribbean, what it means to be a part of the African diaspora and his place and the opportunity he has to make a difference. We're going to take a break here, and when we come back, we are going to get into an exciting aspect, something which is about to happen for the Bahamas, to the Bahamas. We're going to talk about the diaspora conference. You listen to The Essentials. Don't move. Come right back.
So serious.
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Balu's pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Balu's, Nassau East South, call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Balu's, the jerk with the soul of reggae and the spirit of Junkanoo. Balu's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
Around the world, Cleveland Clinic is recognized as a leader in healthcare. Our team of experts relentlessly pursues the best for our patients. From groundbreaking cancer research to state-of-the-art heart surgery, life-saving innovations happen here every day. When it's time to travel for your health, it's time to travel to Cleveland Clinic, your destination for care, for every care in the world. To learn more, visit clevelandclinic.org/Caribbean.
Guardian Radio 96.9 celebrates 10 years as the country's first ever and only all news talk radio station.
Guardian Radio.
Guardian Radio.
Guardian 96.9 FM.
Come join Guardian Radio 96.9 in this wonderful celebration of 10 years on the air by placing your ad in the Nassau Guardian's special anniversary tabloid publication.
Guardian Radio 96.9.
We have fantastic anniversary rates just for this occasion. Imagine full, half, and quarter page ads in color or black and white at the lowest rates ever.
And you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio.
And you can get 10 radio spots between April 11th and 15th for only $302. Prices include VAT. Call your account executive today at 302-2300. 302-2300 and get your ad in by Wednesday, April 6th. Come celebrate with Guardian Radio 96.9. 10 years of fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back to The Essentials as we come to the last leg of our show. We're having a chat with the man behind the think tank here in the Bahamas. It's a group of persons who come together, mostly engaging through WhatsApp and, you know, discussing ideas and strategies and initiatives and focus for making the Bahamas a little bit better. We have to talk about that, Andy, before we get into this diaspora, because I think it's important that we kind of put a structure over this and, you know, help persons out there in radio land to understand that none of these conversations are in any way random or abstract. This is part and parcel of a connection where persons sometimes not seen are working hard or trying their best as they can to add to the collective genius of the Bahamas, to add to the intellectual capacity. I think it's Fred Perpall who said in response to an article which was in the newspaper that don't look at it as brain drain, look at it as brain gain. And I think it's an important concept to contemplate, because when we tap into that which is on the outside the borders of the Bahamas, we are effectively enhancing, expanding, extending the collective genius of the Bahamas. We have a caller on the line. Caller, go ahead quickly before we get into the next leg of the discussion with Andrew. Go ahead.
On radio?
Yes, you are on radio.
Oh, Father Palacios, man. How are you?
How are you doing, Father Palacios?
Oh, great, great. I better, Andy. Good to hear you again.
Thank you, Father Palacios. How are you? I talked to Carlos earlier today. I was on the program with him.
Oh, yeah. So I understand. He really respects you a lot. I know why he won't do that, but
it's mutual. No, brilliant, brilliant. And we had him on his presentation today on climate change for the think tank that Hubert just talked about a few minutes ago. Is something that is not just a Bahamian problem, it's a worldwide problem with climate change. And we've made a commitment through our scholarship foundation where we're educating young Bahamians to study climate change so that they can help us and seeing whether we can not lose so many of the 700 islands as tide continues to rise.
Chime in a bit. You remember, some islands in the Caribbean have been selling citizenships, and of course the EU and others better stop to that, or they try to. And we in the Bahamas, somebody was suggesting that we ought to be in that business to attract some high net worth people. That the Turks and Caicos Islands have a model whereby citizens of other countries, namely the Bahamas and others, I'm sure, whose parents or even grandparents were from Turks Islanders are entitled to apply for and invariably they get it. But also they can get citizenship. Now, I'm wondering if you think that would be a good model for Christians in the diaspora. Some of them might be ready to come home. Some of them might be ready to either give up their American. They might be required to, or I don't know the patients, but we might not require them to get the best of get your tax, whatever tax benefits could accrue, whatever other benefits you could have by virtue of being parents, your grandparents were. What do you think about liberalizing or extending that kind of a courtesy or benefit to attract some people who have lots of brain power, lots of economic power, lots of influence, try to engage some of them? I think we need also to have a massive redistribution of. So some people, the Lutra, for example, you say you're from Tappan Bay. I love it right on the corner there. I served the Lutra 3.5 years.
Father Palacios, you're breaking up. We can't hear you too well. I think we got some of it, but let's talk about the aspect of creating that connection with the country as Father Palacios fixes his connection.
Yeah, citizenship by investment, even the United States have a program where for $500,000, if you buy a house or, a business, employ people in a disadvantaged area, you will be eligible for citizenship. Not that you'll get it. I think we've got to find some creative ways, but because of what we have to offer, we may have to lift the bar much higher than what other Caribbean countries are doing. For Bahamians, that may not be necessary because under our laws, my son or my daughter are eligible through me being a born Bahamian, are eligible to claim their Bahamian citizenship or passports, should they desire that, and I'm sure they are, and they have. And most Bahamians feel the same way.
What about your grandchildren, though? Let's assume that your son didn't, and your grandson decided that he wanted to.
Well, that's a good point, and I think there ought to be a path for citizenship. Recently, I was involved with an investor who had lost their citizenship in Trinidad and had to reapply for it. And I'm sure there's some basis in law. And I wish I had Jerry Buth on the phone who could have explained this much better than I am. But let's get back to Father Palacios' crux of the matter. Should we offer citizenship as an item to spark investment? I think we should offer not necessarily citizenship, but offer people an opportunity to have residency with a path at some point to seek citizenship. I don't think we should be in the business of just selling citizenships. We've got to be able to create the opportunity for high net worth individuals, and we know they will come for all kinds of reasons. In 20 minutes, you can be in a jurisdiction if you were here in Florida. I've never seen the amount of real estate that's being sold in the Family Islands during COVID, where people wanted to find these secluded places. And as you know, they want to have an easy way to get there and a quick way to get there and a quick way to get back to conduct business. We have a program that we're working on that allow people to go and fish for the day, bone fishing for the day in the Family Islands and have tropic ocean land in the water, pick them up and bring them back for drinks later on in the afternoon. Why? Because we want to create more economic opportunity for these Family Island folks that have been suffering, and for years, government has said, how do we reinvigorate and redevelop the Family Islands? But I think government ought to look at how we can attract high net worth individuals. We're attracting a lot of them now based on what we have to offer. Will we attract more? But here's the mistake a lot of these islands have made. These characters that sometimes comes in with alternate views on how they can exploit the citizenship. And that's not what we want to do.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, we're less than 400,000 people in the Bahamas. As we begin to grow, obviously we hope people will spread out through those 700 islands, because at 7 miles wide and 21 miles long, you know, we can't afford to have many more people just live in Nassau. So we've got to create those opportunities in the other family islands.
And I think, I think there is a way to do that. Like you said,
no question.
Becomes eligibility and a clear path, really clear path, where the policy is clear, the process is clear, and the things which you need to achieve in order to get there is clear, but it's not going to be automatic. And if you do that and you use it strategically, and you use it as a means of not only driving development where an individual would ideally want to be, but where the country needs it. So, you know, we are sending you to Inagua, and because you're going to Inagua, there are certain things which is going to accrue to you. Of course, we're going to put in infrastructure. We're going to work on enabling that environment, but we have a long-term plan, and the long-term plan is this. And you fit into that. And as a result of you fitting into that, we will facilitate you. And here are some of the other benefits which comes with that type of a thinking. So as a result of that, you will benefit and the Bahamas will benefit. The Bahamas will glean the benefit for the long haul, as opposed to, you know, sometimes what currently exists. So let's talk about the Diaspora Conference, which is coming up in not too short, not too long while from now, Andrew.
Sure, absolutely. So every year, and this is our 26th year, we've held the National Association of Black Hotel Owners annual summit, which will take place in Miami, July the 13th through the 15th. But at the conclusion of that summit, we also have a heritage and tourism multicultural, but we've decided at the hotel in Miami to also concurrently run the first annual Bahamas Diaspora Summit. For any number of reasons of trying to wake up the diaspora, engage the government of the Bahamas, engage private sectors, engage businesses on how through extension we can increase and begin not only nation building, but begin looking at a market that typically the Bahamas hadn't looked at before or hadn't paid a whole lot of attention to. And I'm sure some folks will disagree with me, and that's fine. We can disagree, but we don't have to be disagreeable. And so when we put this on, our partners in this process is going to be the new Consul General Kirk Hollingsworth and Shayla Cartwright, who are our new consul generals here in Miami. But we've spent many years with the previous consul general, Linda Mackey, working on this program, because it's really a Bahamian program. And our goal is to have a national discussion on climate change, have a national discussion on tourism. Our client is to engage Bahamians here in the diaspora, people like Cliff Hamilton, who runs the tourism department in Trinidad, folks like Andy Burrows, who just finished his stint in Bermuda. So we're bringing all these folks together because we saw something interesting during the last hurricane that devastated our country. And that is, when it was at our darkest moment, for me as a Bahamian sitting in my living room, trying to track down relatives and see where they were, calling our contacts and how can we help? And the next morning, no communication, police is down, airport is down. And I heard Ambassador Sidney Colley say today in the think tank that we're 4 months out from hurricane season again. And I shudder to think, not if, but when, another devastating hurricane will come. And just imagine that hurricane hits Nassau, Freeport, and Abaco. We will essentially be out of business unless we plan, unless we make plans to combat that. So we're gonna have discussions on how we do that. I remember waking up the next day and trying to contact folks and not getting anywhere. But what we had done here in Florida, I headed up a committee of relief workers, friends from the Bahamas, folks from the diaspora, people like Earl Miller, Rosie Gomez, who heads up the Bahamas National Association. And we all went to work. You know, when we started getting donations in and planes ready to go, I found that we had a major issue in something we're going to discuss at the Diaspora Summit. I was told that all goods going into Freeport and Abaco must come into Nassau to be inspected and then transshipped to the places where they needed them. Well, obviously, most people that know me, I said that was utterly nonsense. And so I called my colleagues and my contacts and I said, why can't we just have a different strategy? If the issue is customs and immigration, then move customs and immigration to Fort Lauderdale. And the question came up, who's going to pay for it? And we said, we will from the diaspora. And for about 17 months, we had customs officers working from the private FBOs here in Fort Lauderdale, clearing goods in. The diaspora, a young man from Freeport, Ahmad Williams, who manned a 60,000 square foot warehouse that Yellow Cab donated to us. Why did Yellow Cab donate it to us? We asked them, and plus the owners of Yellow Cab in Florida has a house in Scotland Key. Didn't even know we had a Scotland Key until the hurricane. But I watch aircraft after aircraft fly in. I think I arrived in Abaco the second or third day after the hurricane. I had never seen such devastation in my entire life, as if somebody had dropped a bomb. Alive, who we had kept in touch with, had planned, and they had a bunker there. And when I got there, folks' phone wasn't working. So I made my way to the Alive bunker, and they gave me about 20 or 30 cell phones that I went back to the airport and started distributing. And then we decided, let's try and evacuate people. We were lucky that Delta Airlines gave us an MD-90 aircraft that we flew both to Freeport and Abaco, just moving people into Nassau. But I should tell you this. In Abaco, when we landed, the airport was in shambles. Delta gave us a full crew. They gave us air marshals. But the most important thing, they gave us a mechanic. And when we got ready to take off from Abaco, the plane had an issue. There was a young man sitting in front of me. He got up, grabbed his toolkit, walked in the cockpit, and then went outside the airplane. And a half an hour later, he came back and we were in the air. And I said to this young man, who are you? He said, I'm a mechanic from Freeport that works for Delta in Fort Lauderdale. I was blown away.
Yes.
Or Robert from Tropic Ocean. We would fly into Freeport, and into Abaco, first flight at 7 o'clock in the morning and work all day running flights between Nassau, Freeport, and Abaco, and on the return flight at 6 o'clock, I can tell you the CEO of Tropic Ocean, going into the cargo hold and falling asleep, taking a nap because, like most of us, we were so tired. And so it gave me this inspiration, if other people can do it, why don't I engage our diaspora to do more? And then the idea of having, we've never had it before. As I told you, my brother ran the Bahamian Connection for many years in Miami. And if I wanted boiled fish and Johnny Cake or stew fish or Bahamian, you go there and you meet all the Bahamians. You meet people that had visited the Bahamas and you meet them at all these Bahamian restaurants. And you always hear the same thing, these various stories of how much I love the Bahamas. If I love the Bahamas that much, then let us do something to help the Bahamas. And so this Diaspora Summit at the Airport Hilton in Miami, July the 15th through the 17th, is not only a celebration, but a reawakening of what it is that is Bahamian, that is people, that my grandparents taught me, that I saw at my grandfather's petty shop, where he was part of the neighborhood. And so if the Bahamas is going to grow, we must all chip in, be part of that neighborhood, and stop this fighting that we're on this team or that team. There's only one team, it's called Team Bahamas. And that's what the theme of the conference is. It's called Team Bahamas.
Yeah, that's powerful. We have a caller on the line. Caller, let's take this call very quickly, and then we can wrap up. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi, good afternoon, good evening.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, caller, we listen.
I just wanted to ask just the Ingram something. Ingram said you were from Eleuthera?
Tarpon Bay, Eleuthera.
I'm Tarpon Bay, Eleuthera.
Do you know the name or remember the name of a gentleman by the name of Alan Ingram?
Alan is my cousin. Big Alan, I'm better looking. I'm better looking than he is, though.
I just was asking some friends of mine where Alan was, because we used to play American football on the Eastern Parade of Malcolm Park. And do you know that Alan Ingram and Goodwin Blyden were the first two Bahamians invited to come to the Washington Redskins summer camp to try out for American football?
I do know that, and Alan is now between Virginia and Freeport. And I always used to tell them when I played football, I used to help him get ready. But obviously, he's much bigger than I am. And Redskins didn't invite me. So that's why I went on to just focus on education and business. But no, Alan and Blyden doing well. And I spoke with him a couple of weeks ago. But thank you for remembering him.
Yeah, Alan Ingram, I think, is also a part of the think tank. And
He is.
Individual who I have had the opportunity to engage with. A very, very, very interesting gentleman, you know, very insightful and very kind with his time. Yes, so we are basically out of time, out of show, but we've been having, I think, a wonderful conversation. And these conversations are never, ever complete. They're just so much to discuss. So we see this as a start, Angie. We are going to ensure that from time to time, we bring you back or bring other individuals, some who are connected with a think tank here in the Bahamas and throughout the diaspora. And I just want to pause here to give a shout out to you as one of the brain behind bringing this think tank together. For the individuals who participated in the event today, Eric Carey, Carlos Palacios, Jeff Beckles, Andy Ingram, I'm mentioning you again, Felix Stubbs, Gandhi Pinder, and the support that we got from Sapodilla Restaurant. Certainly, it's a start, I think, of something which is going to be fantastic. Using brain power.
Don't forget, Don't forget former ambassador Sidney Colley and Andy Gomez.
Colley, and I understand that the Director General of Foreign Affairs was also there today. So, you know, a number of individuals coming together and showing what volunteerism looks like. When you get to the place where you realize that this is not simply about me, it's not simply about Andrew, it's not simply about any individual, but it's about making sure that we do the things which are necessary so that the team can win. What you said, the theme of the diaspora conferences again? One team?
Team Bahamas, one team. Team
Bahamas. So it is effort in the direction of ensuring that Team Bahamas win. You have the final word, Andrew. A couple of quick seconds, you have a minute or so. Your final words on this discussion.
Thank you very much. You bring much value, information, system to listeners. I'm happy to be a part of that. And I can't thank you enough for what you do. And as a representative of both Jamaica and the Bahamas, I feel the kinship because we're both in the same boat. So I want to keep the lines of communication open. I think for us, education, economic opportunity, wealth distribution, and we've got to find a way to distribute the wealth in the Bahamas. It's a shame what we're having in the Bahamas today, but let's create more jobs. Let's create more opportunities. Particularly entrepreneurship is one of the key that we have focused on. So I'm looking forward to additional work with you, Hubert. Let me know what I need to do. I'm at your beck and call. Definitely. Thank you again for the opportunity.
And I certainly thank you for the privilege of having us hosting you. What we want to do is to tap into your network to get and hear the voices of not just Bahamians outside of Bahamas, but persons who are friends of the Bahamas, persons who have an interest. We want to hear from the world, and we're going to bring them right here on The Essentials. We also will be bringing persons from the think tank. We will be bringing various subjects and discussion, because our job this year, our job going forward, is to make the shift from just having regular conversation to be fully engaged in this whole idea of national development. Carla, we see you. We can't take you. We're totally out of time. We just want to say be good, walk good, and all the best. We always end our show by saying, do not allow your greatness to become a victim of your unwillingness to change. Walk good, one love, and Ubuntu. No, it's all.